This first poem, Hope, arrived in my mailbox anonymously. So this one is headed, Hope, Letter to Unitarian Universalists. Hope. As it burned out on its stage in a fire of fury and individualism? Or is there one last breath in this moment, one breath of hope left in us? Can we stop competing for who among us is right or solely privileged with the truth in this ongoing exchange? Where are you, universalist? Will heaven rise up again in us? Is there no hell or heaven? The fight to preserve heaven is in the hands of you, universalists. Where are you, Unitarian? Are we now left fractured by a million, not three? Or is there a single truth for which we all strive? If God is one, a singularity, then where do we stand? It must only be together, united as one, if only in faith. What hope rises again in this age of narcissism? In this battle to the death, best man wins, alone with nothing but incinerated dust of all. The good burned during the battle, to keep our privilege, our wealth? Or is it true that we are all created equal? With a needed rewriting of this declaration, will hope rise again? Our heritage has a burning ember, a birth mother upon which to build a flame, a global community of hope signifying more than nothing on this rock, a rock that will be silent, will not be silent as long as we breathe. We must decide to be or not to be with the best self we can be, because the alternative trumps all. If we do not, in this moment, breathe in the good and out the poison gas of our own exhaust. The biggest challenge is to face our own mortality and still choose to be truly good to each other. When it truly does not benefit anyone to sacrifice privilege, beware the one ring that unites them all, or so we have learned from Tolkien, so that instead we can practice love and be good. Wealth, power, privilege, our own narcissistic story may be the last breath of hope.
This will be a spare little poem simply titled Continuum. That woman over there is planting seedlings down in rows and weeding around her marigolds as if it mattered. Presently she'll stand and press a hand against her back. Her face is shadowed by a battered hat. There is pain. She has a cancer. Things grow. Given water by the gardener or her daughter, the marigolds will bloom without her. Why then does she bother when it isn't going to matter?
This poem is about a journey that I've been on. It's called Layers of Knowledge. Understanding racism is like peeling an onion. First, most of it grows deep in the ground where you can't see it. Use your strength and sever its roots and pull it into the light. Acknowledgement. Seeing the tunic, the outer skin, is just the beginning. Peeling each scale layer reveals deeper connections. Layers of unequal and separate, of races rigged with no starting line, of wombs stressed and shot hands up, of culture exploited and pipelines flowing to bars, and gerrymandering voices silenced. You must keep peeling the layers, going deeper in your knowing. Once you have exposed the onion, the layers of intolerance will make you cry. The stench will overwhelm. The smell of injustice in your skin, in your hair, and in your eyes. No matter how hard you try, it cannot be washed away. It is part of your home long after you cannot see it. Understanding racism is like peeling an onion. It is part of the recipe of America's melted pot.
Thank you.
And I get to share some of the poetry translated by our own Walter Andrews, who's with our young people in RE. And I don't know how many of you know, but Walter is a world-renowned scholar of Sufi poets. So this translation is a riff on a lyric by Baki. When you're gone, damn, it hurts. My heart is in exile, wounded, alone, and burning, peering through my chest's iron bars and yearning. I'm weeping till my eyes flow with blood, on and on when you're gone. I'm impaled on a dagger of grief when you're gone. Peace and patience catch the last wailing train to annihilation. Its headlamp lights the tracks, a flaming torch of separation when you're gone. When you're gone, I'm not worth a red cent, a freebie in the shopping mall of discontent. When you're gone, I'm parched, lips cracked and dry, crawling in a desert of how to and why, seeking the oasis of reunion.
My name is Barbara Van Dyke Schumann. I'm going to read two very short poems. The first one is The View from the Ridge of Studhorse Hill. The lake in the shadow of the hill reflects the dark of the night sky, like the frog in the bottom of the well who thinks the circle above him defines the sky. The meaning of this purple, like the frog's vision, is respite, sorrow, and safety from the joyous sun slants. Give me all to see, the frog, the lake, and the slanted gold on Studhorse Hill. The next one I wrote at Claylock on the ocean coast. The beaches at Claylock are paved with flat, round stones, sorted carefully according to size. Loaves, pancakes, flattened eggs, dinner mints. Twice daily, the skilled fingers of the tide order this arrangement, resting each against the other. Tipped westerly, smooth faces serenely gazing out to sea. Stumbling, I spoil this perfection as they gladly shift, clacking softly, merrily on their sandy bed. I pick up one perfect disc, then another. My coat pockets bulge with my booty. I lie guarded behind the silver log where the stones sprawl, careless and flat to the sun in untidy sand. I close my eyes and store this life medicine to be used flamboyantly against those tight city days ahead.
And this one more, sorry, I forgot to. This is a late submission from Fran Korn. It's called Therapy. Receiving, rejecting, receiving, rejecting, receiving, and correcting. Giving, receiving, and connecting. Choosing to receive, to give, to accept, to connect, over and over with words, pictures, silence, and tears. Knowing that neither of us has the answers, we know it together. And not being afraid to give the not knowing meaning and value. This also is a poem from Hafiz that is actually from Gazelle, and Walter translated it and rearranged it. Should that fair Seattle barmaid take my heart in hand, for a mole black on her cheek, I'd trade Bellevue and Mercer Island. Give me, lass, another glass of your endless wine. We've lakes and seas and cherry trees not found in realms divine. Oh, damn those sweet and flirty girls who cause us such unrest. Each took our piece of heart in gift like a potlatch guest. For this imperfect love of ours, true beauty finds no place. What need of hue and mole? And down has the perfect face. So talk of wine and song. Forget life's meaning for just a little. For none will solve, not now or then, the secret of this riddle. Potiphar's wife thought Joseph looked good and better from day to day. I know that love would rend her veil, lead modesty astray. You trashed my name in public. Fine. To lovelies, it's a sport. For ruby, sugar-eating lips to give a sour retort. My life, my love, the young fortune blessed, all fair and bold. More than life itself, the wisdom of the old, you wrote a pearl of a poem on a girl, like Hafiz. Recite it, please. And into your verse, the heavens will strew a necklace of Pleiades. And this is another of Barbara Van Dyke's poems. Poem for a child, lost and found. When I said your name, I saw only a void. You were the word cloud in a cloudless sky. Over years, you became the not is, the unembodied, the sound of the bell not ringing. You were the limitless absence, the vortex reflecting only itself. The essence of you had drifted away like vapor. Were you ever? And now you are. While I thought you were gone, you were always there. The scent of clean, the artist's negative spaces, the rest stop of a musical grammar, the silence at symphony's end, the void between the stars. Now, I see what you have done. Brought the night sky into the room of my heart. You, who had been nothing, were nowhere, an endless absence made this heart.